You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Poppy Singer. It's good to have you here, Poppy.
Thank you.
So Poppy, the way the show begins is with a huge question, and you can't answer it, but it's a way to start the conversation. Who are you? What do we need to know about the life you aspire to live, or some of the labels or places you've worn or waste places you've been, to start this conversation?
Well, I think a big piece is that I was raised here. So I've lived here all my life except for 1 year that I was away in Israel. And my kids are both here and my granddaughter's here. And everybody that I know is here, basically.
So your whole... all the people you claim are here.
Yes, for the most part.
Yeah.
So, what else? Both my parents are and were artists, and I grew up in this household full of art supplies, and both of them taught art, so I would go to their workplaces, and there was art supplies around, and I'm grateful for that because my nature is visually oriented, and so I was really supported by accident, I guess, or unless you believe in more than an accident, I was supported to grow and have what I needed for that.
Neat. And how have you carried that tradition or that practice on in your life?
Well, mostly what I've been interested in, even from when I was very young, is the surface pattern design, which means the patterns that go on things. So I spent many years designing repeat patterns for fabric. And if I do ceramics, what mostly interests me is the pattern on it. There are note cards around town with my patterns on it. And when my dad died and I was going through his portfolios, he had saved my artwork, or some of it anyway. And back when I was 4 years old, I was drawing people with clothing on, but the clothing was intricately patterned. So it's obviously been just part of me for my whole life.
And
I think another big part of me is my connection with nature. I feel like being outside connects me to myself, and I'd rather be out in nature, working with it, gardening, watching birds, than I would looking out a big picture window at it. These days, a couple of years ago, I started taking Springfield ornithology at Cornell, and that's been a huge part of my life now, where I just love going out and identifying birds. And this summer, I've been doing things to bring birds into my yards. I put up a bluebird nest, and bluebirds moved in right away, and they've just finished their second clutch, which is really fun. Birds have fledged, and couple weeks ago, a pair of Phoebes moved in and built the nests, and I've got them in my carport. And then on the back of the house, there's we had put up on the outside of the garage this 2-inch thick insulation foam stuff, and chickadees dug into it. I watched them one at a time take pieces of insulation out, and they made a little hole in there, and they're nesting in there. So neat. I just love that. And it makes me feel just more myself.
More nested in yourself, as it were.
Yeah. I guess so. And I've got lots of gardens. So I also grew up with my mom doing a ton of gardening. And although I didn't really appreciate helping out in the garden when I was a teen, I think that was another way that I really got supported in my own nature. Because now it's just a natural thing that I do. I garden. I don't have to read books about it or anything. It's something that I choose to do now as an adult, not something that I had to, well, it was forced on me. I mean, what I'm saying is just, it's my nature to want to do that. And I, that was also supported when I was growing up, even though I didn't realize it.
Right, right. And whether these things are inherited or patterned or just our nature, it's a wonderful mix that we live in, you know. And but for you, the way you claim it is your nature.
Yeah.
That's neat. That's neat. And you have, you've mentioned children and grandchildren.
Yes. I have kids that are 20 years apart. And my daughter and her husband and their child, my granddaughter, live around the corner from me, which is such a gift. And my son is still lives with me. He's a teenager. And I guess another big part is that I homeschooled both of them at least till middle school when they went to ACS. Mm-hmm. And so I've spent a lot of time with them and really trying to support them to have what they need in their life to do what is interesting to them.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that culturally that your parents were Jewish at one point.
Yeah, well, all my grandparents were, but I was raised in this totally atheist household. We're like, it was like forbidden to think about God or anything, but...
Well, okay, and so this is, yeah, and that's where anti-religion and religion become almost like twins.
I mean,
the reaction against something can be as strong as whatever the something was, if you know what I mean.
From alternate generations.
Right, yeah.
So I still believed in God, even though it was a secret inside of myself. But I wouldn't say, so I relate culturally to being Jewish, but I'm not religious. So... And I did spend a year in Israel, like I said, when I was 20. And so I happened to learn Hebrew and still remember a fair amount, which is kind of surprising. It must have just been at a time in my development that things stuck.
Well, it's, I think there are times in development when things stick, like you say. But I think there's times in our lives when we're curious. And so that anything that comes in sticks more with that curiosity. Mm-hmm. Than at other times when we're learning something that we're not so innately taken by.
Right, which is why I homeschooled my kids, so that they could
I was wondering.
They could remember what they learned.
And it may be part of why the life of being an artist is so easy in some sense to pass from parent to child or to for children to, because growing, I mean, my father was a farmer, but he farmed more like an artist than a farmer in terms of his approach to problems and solving them and addressing the contours of the land and how to plow them and how to visually look at them. And he was actually competitive. And even though we were very poor, the one place that he got into competitive contour farming. And so, and he won the state of Missouri in 1956. Wow. And went on to the nationals. And because he would look at the land and read the angles and the pieces, and then he could go out and drive the plow where he had seen, because he remembered what he had seen from afar, and he could just line it up.
That's neat.
Yeah, but it's this way of relating to the world and passing it on to your kids about how you see things. What do you see here? What matters here? What's important here? Mm-hmm. You know, let me tell you about this. And I'm projecting into your homeschooling experience a little bit, but
I think that's in often the deepest way to learn, like in this, in the birding world, it seems like the people who know the most are the people who started young, as kids who are curious about it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play the opening piece that you brought, which is Cat Stevens' Morning Is Broken. Do you want to say anything about that or just play?
Love that song.
Yeah. Well, here we go.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Poppy Singer. So, Poppy, from where you are now, what experiences have most shaped your life?
I think I jump around a little bit in my life in this. When I was young, had a very difficult time taking any kind of risk, down to like choosing which color socks to buy, pink or purple. I had this whole process devised in my head about how to make decisions about which color socks to buy. It was agonizing for me to make choices. And when I was 18, I worked at the Learning Web doing graphic design, and there was a sign on the wall that's still in my head, it will be there forever, that said, if you aren't making any mistakes, you aren't taking enough risks. Mm-hmm. And at that same time, I was part of this small group of young people who went rappelling down Lick Brook. And that was quite an experience. And then the leader, who was Dave Mariah, told me about Outward Bound, and it sounded like a really good thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to be less afraid of taking risks. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for it and went to do it. I did about a 3-week program in North Carolina, and the entire 3 weeks was incredibly challenging for me physically. But also incredibly transformational. So to give an example, the first thing that we did is this ropes course, and there were several things to do up in the trees. But the one that was most significant for me was going across this log that was like, I don't know, 30, 50 feet in the air and 30, 50 feet long, and you know, I don't know, 8 inches across or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I was standing up in the tree and I'm supposed to go across and I just started crying. I was like, there's no way I'm going across this log. This is terrifying. And I had a really, 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 really good leader who had space for me to have feelings. And so he just stood there with me while I cried. And eventually I was done crying and I was like, okay, I can do this now. And I went across the log all the way and I got to the other side and grabbed the tree on the other side and screamed, I did it. And that, like, that was the totally changing moment of my life. Where I've known ever since then that I can do something even if it's frightening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the whole program was like that. That's just one really clear example. And it didn't just affect me, I was going to say physically, but, well, it did affect me physically where I got really strong, but it didn't just affect the risk factor. It also, mm-hmm. spiritually, affected me.
I want to ask a question, because it may help us kind of lead into the more on the spiritual piece. When you were having a hard time making choices, what were you afraid of?
That I'd be unhappy after I chose the pink socks instead of the purple ones. Right. I'd regret it.
So it's the fear of regret.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did your attitude towards regret change as you began to take more risks?
I don't know. It just didn't matter so much if I made the wrong decision.
Did it not matter because you would survive the failure, or did it not matter because you could change your mind? Or
I don't know.
Or,
I just wasn't even thinking about that anymore. I wasn't thinking. I just would, you know, I took a path, and I wasn't. Then after I took it, my mind no longer said, "Oh, you should have done this." It just like dropped out of the picture.
So, okay.
Because now I was on this other path.
Right. And regret only cripples you if you are fixated on history.
Right. You're right.
And if you don't look back too much, you don't get stuck too much. Okay. So what you were leading in a slightly different direction on how the taking risks not only affected, you know, the physical getting stronger to do the outward bound, but also it began to affect your sense of spirituality.
Yeah, I also, this feels really personal, but it's true. We did 3 days of solo and we, you know, with very little with us, a tarp and very little food and water and maybe a knife. I don't even know if we had a knife. And, I had the very visceral experience of that we are one.
Mm-hmm.
And that stayed with me to where when I came back to the group, I just felt connected to everybody. When I came back to Ithaca, I felt connected to everybody. It was a beautiful experience.
Wow. So I'm just playing with the story that you told me and trying to take it in and put the pieces together. And the taking risks, the not having the regret that you thought you would have, and then the experience of oneness. What I wonder is, was the regret about the loss of an opportunity by making a choice rather than the adding on of a new experience and then the experience of oneness?
You're saying those are two different
places. I'm saying that many times we fear that we by our choices we are eliminating one reality and we're blessing another.
Right.
And so we choose this one at the expense of the other, but with this notion of oneness, you can have them in a sense all, but not all at the same time.
Guess so.
You know, but you're not worried about loss.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That.
And you hadn't experienced oneness before that.
No, but I was 20. I think that's kind of remarkable, actually, at 20.
remarkable that you experienced, yeah. or that was that early or that late?
No, I think that was young.
Young. Well, you know, in terms of kind of people's spiritual biographies, it can happen at any time. I've known 8 and 10 year olds who've had that experience, oftentimes with life threatening illnesses.
Oh, right.
But I've also known people who have what I would call unselfconscious grace, where they just move in such a way with the world that they're relating to everything, and they have the experience of oneness, even if they haven't rationalized it that way, because they haven't necessarily felt apart.
Hmm.
For someone
that would be nice.
For someone to really feel a profound sense of oneness is often after you felt so much apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm hearing in your story too, is that you felt apart. For the oneness to have that kind of an impact.
It's interesting because I was alone for 3 days. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, and also I'm wondering if there was something, you know, if that also put an earlier part of your life in perspective.
Well, definitely. I mean, I grew up feeling pretty alone.
Yeah. And the risk taking and the 3 days alone, where you really were alone without anybody to react to or made you connected.
Yeah.
That's powerful. That's really powerful. Let's take a little music break and we'll come back to some of these issues and questions and new ones. You wanted to play Joan Baez Forever Young. Is that a good one for this spot? Or?
Well, I wanted to play that for my kids.
Okay. Do you want to continue or play another one?
I don't.
Sultan of Strings?
Yeah, let's do that one.
Here we go. Blowing in the Wind. For the 3 days out on your own.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many years can a mountain exist before it's washed to the sea? Yes, how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head, pretending he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Poppy Singer. So, Poppy, you were talking about some of the experiences that have most shaped your life, and we just talked through the Outward Bound experience and taking risks and being alone for 3 days and discovering that you were one with the world. And is that a feeling you can go back to?
It's hard to go back to that.
Yeah.
It was so visceral and profound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to
I can remember
back.
It.
Yeah. So what you had some other what else about your childhood or your early life that has helped you to understand the life and appreciate the life you live now?
Well, like I said, I felt alone and I didn't have a choice when I was young. I mean, as a baby, I learned later that I misinterpreted something. Mm-hmm. When I was young, I misinterpreted some family dynamics to mean that I was not wanted, and I lived a lot of years with that belief, and I made a lot of choices in my life from that belief, and hurt myself lots from that belief, and mm-hmm. people around me pulling them into that. And when I was 50, I got tired of that.
Yes, it takes some time for these things.
Really tired of it. Like, I was done.
Right.
And at the same time, I encountered a counselor who was able to speak to me in a way that no counselor's ever had before. And I did some work with him and did some very deep personal work. And that's where I discovered, through meditation actually, that I had misinterpreted something when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
That actually I was wanted. And that was really significant. So you're asking what shaped my experiences. I'd say the first 50 years were deeply shaped by that misinterpretation. Mm-hmm. And learning that it was a misinterpretation, when I had that insight when I was meditating, I felt reborn. I was just ecstatic and happy and felt I belonged on the earth, and everything changed for me then.
Wow. You had a place.
Yeah.
You have a place.
Yeah.
I was born as a replacement baby. The baby born before me died about 2 days after he was born. And even though it was my mother's sixth birth, it threw her into a massive depression, which was at about the same time she was the same age was when her mother died. I was born 4 years later as she was coming out of that depression, and I never felt that she could see me clearly. She was never looking at me. She was looking at something else, her hope about me or the one or whatever. And it took me, and I recognized that early, but it's taken years for me to understand that she was mentally ill. She went through a major depressive period in her life. And it's just hard to come out from under those assumptions, because they shape what you, and I could never feel like I could be seen,
right,
accurately, or be.
So you felt that when you were young, and
then
what do you think now?
Because of that experience, I have a pretty complex understanding of how people are in the world, because
mm-hmm.
I just experience things from a lot of different angles, or maybe that's part. And now I have more peace at owning all those different points of view. And I'm becoming more gracious at not trying to stick them in people's faces,
mm-hmm.
because I don't have something to fight against.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And that's a slow process. That's been since I was in my... When I was 20, they thought I was so angry and radical that I wouldn't make it to the age of 30. So,
congratulations.
I turned 60 a few weeks ago. So. Anyway,
you showed them.
I learned a few things. So how did that how did that change your life?
Well, like I said, I felt like I belonged. I didn't used to feel like I belonged on the earth. So now I feel like I belong. And I can recognize more when that old feeling comes up and not project it onto whatever's happening to me right now. Or not necessarily happening to me, but what other people are doing.
Well, you don't interpret as though you don't belong.
Right.
You just say, this is the feeling that I have, is what I'm hearing
you
say.
Right.
And we'll see where it goes.
Well, I go, this is not really, this is not the truth. I know this isn't the truth. So I just have this little conversation in my head.
Right. But it doesn't mean you know what the truth is either. You just know that's not the truth.
So then I have to go talk to somebody and find out what the truth is.
Right. And do you feel like you're getting better at that?
That definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's neat. That's neat. So you've also, but you've followed your in the sense you followed your parents' path in terms of being working for yourself. Artists work for themselves unless they happen to be in commercial art.
Yeah. And so I have to thank my first husband for this. We met in Israel and got married in Israel and came back here. I got pregnant right when I got married and then got pregnant. Let me be clear about that.
And you were 20.
At that point, I was 21.
21, yeah.
And I was right when I got pregnant, the Lebanon War started. And he was called up to fight, or not fight, but he was a medic, but be in the war. And I was not going to be home alone in an apartment pregnant when I was 21. So I said, I'm going home. And he came with me. So he was trying to think of how we could make money, and he thought, let's start a falafel business. So we did that and started at the farmer's market here when it was not where it is now, when it was down where like Island is, Island Health. And it was immediately successful. And then we added egg rolls, vegetarian egg rolls to that, and that also was well received. So then when we split up, I don't know, I just felt confident to continue supporting myself. We just learned how to do that, and it didn't...
There's no mystery to it. You can figure it out.
Yeah. And so then I continued with the egg rolls for a long time, and then I moved into different textile areas, making clothing and bedding and houseware stuff. And now what I do is upholstery. I've been doing that full-time for 5 years. And that's working out really well, too.
Mm-hmm. Neat. 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 What is it about the self-employment that kind of feeds you or satisfies you?
I don't know. I think I've, like, always been on my own rhythm. Like, it's because I've never worked somewhere else. I've always been on my own rhythm. Except for raising kids, you have to be on their rhythms, too.
Right, right.
But I can think for myself. I can work when I want to. I can, I don't know. It just works for me.
Right, right. And what you're making me appreciate is that someone who is, in a certain sense, that self-contained, you could either feel like you're enough in engaging the world, or you could feel like the world doesn't want you or is irrelevant, but you still become a survivor. Because you have all the skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I mean, that may or may not be part of your story, but it's just, it makes you, the way you told it just made me think of things that I hadn't thought about before.
I hadn't thought about that either. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah. And you've what has formed you is raising children too. as you were saying, you have right. to move with them. You can't call the world by your rhythm.
Right. And I've especially as a homeschooler done that, you know, not just send them off to school, but really paid a lot of attention to what was interesting to them and provided mentors or whatever they needed for that. And I've been doing that when my son is done with, you know, when he's 20, I will have been doing that for 40 years.
Yes.
So that definitely was a big part of my adult life.
Right. You could say that defines your adult life in many ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other major influence is having the artist, our parents as artists.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And now you wanted to play the song Forever Young. It's a Dylan song recorded famously by Joan Baez.
I wanted to play that because it's something I've always wanted to learn on the guitar so that I could sing it to my kids, and I just somehow haven't done that. So here it is.
Here we go.
May God's blessing keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung. May you stay. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Poppy Singer. So, Poppy, you had some fun playing with these questions, and one of them you reworded, which I liked, is what is your cutting edge?
Well, doing this interview is a cutting edge.
Yes.
Because I'm kind of shy and not that wordy of a person. But, so my current edge, which I've incorporated into this interview, is to embrace the belief that I've done well. Uh-huh. In other words, that everywhere I've been is an important place that's gotten to me where I am now.
Right. Right. And what does well mean?
Well, life's pretty good right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like I said, my kids are healthy and nearby, and I have much more than just a roof over my head. I have a beautiful piece of property that I have a garden on and have a pond, and I have neighbors who I love up and down the road. And my business is going well. I'm supporting myself. I have friends that I'm really grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in a relationship now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is someone that I've known for 30 years. And it's kind of living proof of this idea that I couldn't be where I am now if I hadn't been where I was.
Right, right.
Because of all the places I've been and the growing I've done, being with him is just easy and flows, and he's the cherry on top. So that's what's working.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you said that you made a statement about the past that you have done well, and how does that, what is the light that puts everything that you went through into? Because it didn't all feel good. It doesn't make it what it, in some sense, what it wasn't, but it makes it purposeful. Or how does it make it? How does it make you own it in a different way?
Well, I'd say I'm like in the process of working on that.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's the work?
The work is to see the positive in things that I have, that have been a real struggle.
Right. Where the negative dominated your perception.
To make a positive lesson out of it,
mm-hmm.
for myself.
Right. Right, so it's not to deny how hard it was, but it's to put what you learned as being worth what it took.
Right. So, I wouldn't say I'm totally there, but that's what I'm working towards.
That's your intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how long has this been your intention?
Maybe for a long time, but it feels like recently it's... Let's get even more recent. You know, it was when I was thinking about these questions that I was like, this is the perfect time to really start thinking about this. When I'm thinking about my life, going over my life, how can I turn the story into a positive one?
So this has been something you've been struggling with for a few years, and this brought it into focus.
Yes, this interview did that for me.
Well, good.
I wanted it to be something for me too.
Right.
So
no, and that is the intention, that it's for you, it's for me, and it's for the listener to overhear, because the most important things in life, we oftentimes overhear other people talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's often the intimacy in the overheard conversation and the directness that we don't get when people start talking more directly to us or to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to play a piece of music in conjunction with this particular question. and it's Joe Crookston's Good Luck John. Do you want to say anything about that piece?
Well, it's the same thing. It's, you know, what looks bad turns out the next day or whatever is very good.
Yes.
So and he actually has the same good answer as same cherry on top as me.
Well, here
which
we go.
I didn't think of before.
That's very funny.
John had a horse and the horse ran away, bad luck, bad luck. John had a horse and the horse ran away, bad, bad luck. Bad, bad luck, the neighbors did say, bad luck, John, has come your way. Bad luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. Well, the horse came back with a wild mare, good luck, good luck. The horse came back with the pretty white mare, good, good luck. Good, good luck, the neighbors did say, good luck, John, has come your way. Good luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. Well, the mare kicked John and broke his leg, bad luck, bad luck. The pretty white mare broke John's leg, bad, bad luck. Bad, bad luck, the neighbors did say, bad luck, John, has come your way. Bad luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. With a broken leg, he missed the draft. Good luck, good luck. Well, the army came and walked on past. Good, good luck. Good, good luck, the neighbors did say, good luck, John, has come your way. Good luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. And it would not heal. Bad luck, bad luck. And the pain was all that John could feel. Bad, bad luck. Bad, bad luck, the neighbors did say, bad luck, John, has come your way. Bad luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. Belle, the nurse, she came to take care of. Good luck, good luck. And the two of them, they fell in love. Good, good luck. Good, good luck, the neighbors did say. Good luck, John, has come your way. Good luck has come your way. He said, maybe, it's hard to say. He said, maybe, it's hard to say.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Poppy Singer. So Poppy, the question that I can see from your notes that you had the least connection with on some level, but actually it's kind of funny given this conversation. We've already gone over many of the big pieces,
right?
But we haven't summarized them.
Okay.
And that is, what do you do to take care of yourself? And how do you know you need to do it? When do you know you need to do it? And I mean physically, emotionally, intellectually. You've made reference to the big events in your life and how they've helped you learn to take care of yourself. But what do you do kind of in a smaller way, kind of through the day and, you know, and...
First thing I do in the morning, especially once spring comes, I have this little ritual that I call greeting the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I get my morning drink, some tea, and if I can, go out barefoot and to see what's outside.
Mm-hmm.
And during migration, that involves bringing my binoculars. But just seeing how the plants are doing and the birds are doing. I've done that for many, 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 many years. At least 20 years I've been doing that. And as I've gotten older, I've needed to do exercise, go to the gym, so that I don't have problems.
Mm-hmm.
I do that preventatively. I eat as well as I know how to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a therapist who lives down the road, whose office is down the road. So when I need help, I give a shout out to him. So, and I also take care of myself by making sure I see my family and my friends.
Mm-hmm. And part of the seeing family and friends is the emotional care. I mean, all of this, you know, going out in nature is calming and connecting your body and your mind and your heart to what's going on. But what I'm curious about is, and seeing your therapist is emotional self-care, but also how is it that you also feed yourself intellectually? Because you think about this stuff, but you don't live in your head.
Say the question again.
How do you feed yourself intellectually? You've talked about physically and emotionally. And how do you restore yourself or engage yourself in thoughts about things that are analytical, intellectual in nature?
I don't think I do very much of that.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I read books.
Right.
But
And you think in terms of environmental stuff, and you think in terms of the bird count,
and the bird
identification and stuff like that.
I guess intellectually, I always feel more alive when I'm learning something new.
Mm-hmm. And this season of your life, the birds are a big part of the new learning.
Yeah.
And the person you're seeing.
That's new too.
Yeah. And you also have, you know, a son who's in ACS and going to be flying the nest before too long.
Yes, he's planning that already.
So there are things for you to learn too. Yeah. No, this is good.
Another thing that I learned in the last year and a half anyway, is a new kind of swimming. So swimming is the exercise that's, I've never thought of myself as athletic at all, but swimming is something that's always come easily for me. I've done women's swimming, and last winter, not this one, two winters ago, I took a new kind of swimming class, and that has been a big learning also.
Right. When you said you didn't feel wanted, like you had a place in the world, and then when you were 50, you had this epiphany that you had misinterpreted something. How does, when you don't have a place, you're a constant alien. How did taking your care of yourself, when you didn't have a place,
mm-hmm.
how did taking care of yourself change? What did you do to take care of yourself when you were an alien or when you were not wanted in that sense?
I don't know if I did.
Okay. What did you do? You just survived or?
Yeah. I just sort of did what I had to do.
Right.
Well, I always liked dancing, so dancing would lift my spirits tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And singing. I've always loved singing. So there was a time when there was a group of us who were singing every week together, and that was wonderful.
Right, right. And how did your framing of not being wanted put you in a position where you couldn't get the care that you needed because you were people, you couldn't engage people in a positive way?
How did that affect my relationships?
No. What negativity did you bring to the relationship because of your feeling?
Oh, because I was always trying to prove to people that they didn't love me.
So,
which when someone's done that to me,
uh-huh,
that hurts me.
Right. So you're hurting, you're actually making them feel the hurt that you're accusing them of.
Yeah.
That's the most direct you've said that, because we didn't say it quite that directly before. So to learn to care for yourself, you've had to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly. Yeah.
And giving them the benefit of the doubt allows you to begin to see what may or may not be there.
Right.
And
allows for a lot more love between the two of us.
Right. So as part of your self-care, it's not picking them apart for what they've done wrong to you.
Right.
And that, so is self-care. That would be, I guess, it's how you take care of others around you is how you take care of yourself.
Yeah, I could see that.
In that framing, I have never thought of it quite in that way, but the way you set up the problem allows me to reframe it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That is an interesting reframing to me anyway,
yeah.
Coming out of your experience.
I'll have to listen to this again so I remember that.
Poppy, it has been really good to get to know you, even though we've met before, but it's been good to get to know a different and deeper side of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to close with the Make Peace Brothers, Thank You.
Yes.
And do you want to say anything about it?
I just love this song. And it makes me really happy. They were friends with my daughter, are friends with my daughter, and I just think it's a fabulous song.
Here we go.
To the sunlight in the morning, to the clouds of cool sweet rain, to the woman who birthed me, through tears of laughter and of pain, to everyone who gave me love, 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 to the teacher who inspires, and to the ones who make us think, and to the people with the courage of wonder, and
brothers without tethers, and to the ones who right the wrongs, wrongs, wrongs,
and to the doctors without borders, and to the nurses in the war, and all I owe my health to, and to you I play these chords, and to you I pledge my heart.
My life, and we're singing.